From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2013 when a remarkable statistic was released about seniors in America. 5.4 million seniors are food insecure. That accounts for nearly 10%. Even more ominous is the projection that food insecure seniors could increase by 50% when the youngest of the baby boom generation reaches age 60 in 2025. How did we get here? The consequences are dire. Food insecure seniors are 60% more likely to experience depression, 53% more likely to report a heart attack, 52% more likely to develop asthma, 40% more likely to report an experience of congestive heart failure. Next week, the city of Rochester is officially rolling out a new initiative to help seniors who are at risk here, and we're about to find out how. My guests for the hour include Andy Rao from the Rochester Mayor's Office. Andy, nice to have you.
Well, thank you, and it's glad to be here.
Mitch Gruber is here from FoodLink. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Also here is Julie Aldrich from the Monroe County Office for the Aging. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you, Evan.
And Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Andy Rao from Rochester Mayor's Office. Mayor Lovely Warren is certainly one of many leaders in our community who are aware of these issues with seniors. It's not like there are no initiatives or programs going on. So why now target this population of people in our community?
Well, there are several reasons. One, the mayor believes we should invest in our own people. And seniors are a great investment. They've already contributed to the community in a lot of the voluntary organizations. They're the ones that take up the slack. They're the ones that go out there and plant in our community gardens. They're the ones that are raising grandchildren. They're the ones that volunteer to teach English as a second language in all sorts of programs. That in itself is a great thing and another reason why we should touch upon them. And this all ties into a much more broad spectrum of the mayor's own belief in healthy and vibrant neighborhoods, education, safety, security. These are the things that she's been stressing, and our seniors have been contributing tremendously to that, and yet somehow everybody forgets about them. You remember buying gifts for your children? You know, how often do you buy gifts for great-grandma and grandpa? You might stop by occasionally to say hello, and that's part of the problem.
I think that's well said. And so my understanding is what's rolling out next week, it's not going to be the largest initiative the city of Rochester will ever do, but it is targeted, it is specific. And so what's going to start happening next week?
Well, what's going to start happening next week is the city has put together, once again, under Mayor Warren's direction, a pamphlet. There are going to be SNAP applications, which is the, to provide people with benefits that do exist out there. And others will tell you more about them here in a moment. Mm-hmm. It will tell you what the guidelines for SNAP. And once again, thanks to FoodLink, we're also going to be having the schedule for their corner markets, where they do accept SNAP. And this is to provide healthier food. We are going to be going to all, like, the senior centers, the settlement houses, the neighborhood associations, and to all the residents in, like, the RHA buildings, Rochester Housing Authority buildings, to let them know it's here. If you haven't applied for it, please do. We want you to. The mayor wants you to be healthy. We're rewarding you. We want you to be, live your golden years out to the fullest, and having a full belly with good, nutritious food is important.
So that starts next week, and I want our listening audience, if you've ever had issues or concerns about a family member, maybe concerns yourself or challenges even in dealing with applications, the SNAP program, or anything you want to weigh in on this subject, we'd love to hear from you with our panel this hour. It's 844-295-TALK, and that number is toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Whenever we talk about this issue, Mitch Gruber of FoodLink, people have questions on who accepts SNAP benefits to begin with, and FoodLink does.
Yeah, several of our programs do. FoodLink is the food bank here in Rochester, and 10 counties we serve all together. And the amount of programs that we run is huge. And a lot of them are food, traditional emergency food. So soup kitchens, food pantries, homeless shelters. And those aren't places where there's even an exchange of dollars. And that's a whole nother conversation that we can have about those types of agencies. But what we're here to talk about and what the pamphlet that the mayor's office is putting out next week talks about is specifically our curbside market and our farm stands, which are essentially small makeshift farmers markets, if you will, non-traditional farmers markets that bring all the bounty of produce that we have around us in this region and bring it to folks affordably and conveniently. And those programs do, in fact, take SNAP. They take WIC senior benefits and as well the WIC farmers market checks, amongst a whole other host of vouchers and payments.
So where are you? That's an important question on where you are and where they can access you.
Yeah, so I'll start with our curbside market. That I would not be able to even tell you all the sites because we go to so many places, mm-hmm. but there's no corner of the city that doesn't have a curbside market stop nearby. I'd encourage anyone who's interested to look at our website, foodlinkny.org. If you're willing, we could find a way to cross-list the schedule on the WXXI website
somehow.
Yeah,
and in fact, once we podcast this program, and our listening audience should know by now, we podcast every hour on WXXINews.org/connections. We'll put that link there, and we'll help list it out.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I don't want to bogart the conversation because I could talk about the curbside market I have talked about it for hours at a time before, Evan, believe it or not. So
I do believe it.
I got to keep it short here. But essentially, it's a mobile farmers market. We go out to local farms. We buy produce, and other than produce, we also have eggs and nuts. And granola. That's the extent of our products. And we bring it on a 18-foot step van. We bring it directly into low-income housing facilities, community health centers, YMCAs, and even this summer, we're collaborating with the city by bringing them to a bunch of the different rec centers as well. And we go there, and we're there for about 45 minutes to an hour, and we encourage people to actually climb on the vehicle and shop around, see what you like. Everything that we do, we pass on the wholesale price to make sure that people are, in fact, able to afford everything we have. If we're not making this product affordable and convenient, then there's no point of the program.
They got to know you're coming to participate, right?
Correct. And well, so they don't need to know a lot of people.
Sometimes they see you and they'll say, what's going on?
There's an incredible amount of passersby. Last night, okay. For example, we had a few extra minutes in our schedule and we just stopped by Lexington Court, which is a Rochester Housing Authority apartment unit over on Lexington Avenue nearby Mount Reed. They didn't know we were coming. We got about 16 customers within our hour time there. And believe it or not, the vast majority of them were seniors. Almost every one of them had public assistance, whether in the form of WIC or in the form of SNAP. So, you know, you don't need to necessarily know we're coming, but it's certainly helpful.
And when it comes to the way you are able to travel and be mobile now, does this ameliorate the effects of what we call food deserts? How would you define what a food desert is?
That's an interesting question. I hate to say it, but it's a term that I'm very uncomfortable using. I don't think it's a very descriptive term, and I actually don't think it's a very effective term whatsoever. The definition by the USDA is a neighborhood in a city that doesn't have a grocery store within 1 mile. And the definition then for rural communities is a community that doesn't have a grocery store within 15 miles. Those are very arbitrary numbers. They're not particularly reflective of someone's real lived reality. And the fact is that you could have a grocery store within 0.8 miles of you in the city, but if you don't have transportation, if you're relying upon RTS and you have a bunch of different realities you have to think about, including taking grandchildren from point A to point B, switching buses, bringing back all of those bags of groceries with you after you go grocery shopping, the 0.8 miles doesn't make it particularly easy to shop. So, you know, those numbers are quantified by the USDA, but their lived reality here is that the vast majority of the city of Rochester doesn't have grocery stores in nearby convenient locations.
Okay, so in other words, what I'm envisioning now is the mobile work that FoodLink is doing, maybe reaching seniors who technically are not in a food desert, but really don't have the kind of access that we all should want them to have.
Yeah, and mobility is huge. I mean, the fact is, even our curbside market vehicles, I had the state, we work with the state on this program. They offer us an incentive where every time someone spends $5 on their SNAP benefits, we can provide someone with a $2 incentive check. So actually, someone who spends $5 on food stamps gets a $7 cash value for what they get. So I had the state coming in to visit one of our sites just last week, and they were thrilled with it. It's easily the most effective program in the entire state. They certainly made that clear to me. But one thing that they noticed right away was neither of our vehicles are wheelchair accessible. And that's something that we would love to fix. And the state, we're even going to work with the state to see if we can find a funding stream to change that. But right now, we have to have volunteers who are out there actually helping people in wheelchairs bag what they want, making sure they're getting the right tomatoes, the right peppers, and not able to get on the truck themselves. We have to be able to help them. Mobility is a huge issue. It makes things very difficult. And the senior and the disabled population in Rochester specifically have a lot of issues accessing fresh and healthy food. The curbside market is undoubtedly the single most effective way to ameliorate that.
Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center and Julie Aldrich from the Munder County Office for the Aging. We've been talking about what Food Link, what the City of Rochester, and these partnerships are doing to make access easier. But if a senior is food insecure or in real danger of malnutrition, of not eating, it's not always just an issue of access. Sometimes there are other issues involved there. Is that correct?
Sure.
And can you tell us more about how you start to sort of line up? If someone is not getting essentially the food that they need, they may be having to deal with other problems that would reveal themselves in other ways. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that there's two different kind of the macro level issues that a senior might be facing, which have already been alluded to a little bit, the transportation, getting to the site where they would get their food, being able to carry it back home, the cost of the higher cost of food, and somebody on a limited income needing to deal with making that decision of purchasing their prescriptions versus the food, them understanding what types of food they should be eating. For example, if they have a chronic disease that they've now they're diabetic and they need to change their diet and change how they prepare food, are all some issues that we've found with the individuals that we work with. And on the micro level, a person may have the barriers of being able to stand up long enough to prepare their food, being able to just to have those physical limitations that would make it difficult for them to prepare healthy food. Then you have the emotional barriers of not wanting to apply for SNAP, not understanding how to fill out the application, the literacy levels that could affect somebody accessing different benefits. If they don't speak the language, or if they don't understand the application, or the shame of trying to use a local food cupboard, those are all other kinds of barriers.
And I'll just add the size of the font to those applications. Mm-hmm. And somebody who's an older adult, I mean, I wear thick glasses to begin with, and I have trouble reading them. Mm-hmm. With the county, we have several programs that tie in nicely to the work that Mitch and the mayor's office are doing with this initiative and the outreach. We have 21 senior centers, and of those 21, 8 of them are in the city. Those senior centers, we provide transportation to those senior centers and from those senior centers. So individuals who are 60 and over can go and get a hot meal, some socialization, senior center-related activities. They can talk with a case manager. There's a whole holistic approach to the wellness of the senior. And so connecting those seniors so that they can have a healthier and more lively lifestyle ties in really nice. So one thing Mitch had said, that they can look on the website to find out where the food stamps are or for the food trucks are and everything. Unfortunately, a lot of our seniors may not have access to internet or mm-hmm. smartphones. And so one of the things they can also do is call New York Connects. It's the one-stop shop. They'll assess and do a screen to find out, oh, you're calling about food. Well, if you're calling about food, then there might be some other issues that you're calling about. So by calling 325-2800, they can have that screen. They can get assessed and sent to the right folks. They can find out where Mitch is going to be so that they can get their fresh food. They can get a ride by our transportation provider to and from the center, participate in a hot meal, and it's a real holistic approach to improve their health and wellness.
Talking about food insecurity and a new initiative from the City of Rochester that's rolling out next week to help with this issue with various partners across our community. And I want to read an email that I think is at least I think it's somewhat telling. I don't know that it's representative of an entire population of people who have had challenges here, because I'm sure there are many reasons for these issues. But an email came in, and by the way, you can email the program and communicate with the show during the show if you go to wxxinews.org/connections. And the person writes, please don't use my name. I've been there, making choices and choosing others first. My grandchildren, for example. I was hungry. I didn't want to be a burden to anyone, and that was hard for me to admit. Didn't want to be a burden is what this person says. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I'm not saying that's representative of an entire population of people. We're talking nearly 6 million American seniors who are food insecure. But is that the kind of thing that we've heard before?
Absolutely. I deal with it right now in my own family with my 92-year-old grandmother who doesn't want to be a burden on us. But she doesn't understand that we love her and want to care for her. And she has every part of being a part of this community as everybody else does. And so they're not a burden. It's a benefit that's been put in place to help folks who need that help. 80% of people who are eligible for SNAP benefits that are older adults don't apply for them. And a lot of them, I think, is because they want to, you know, they have that shame or that feeling of burden. And it's not a burden. It's a benefit. And it's to help them. It's to help their families. It's to help their grandchildren. Because if they can stay healthy, then they can have that really meaningful relationship with their grandchildren.
We've talked about kinship caregivers on this program before. And
sure.
And the increased number that impoverished areas, often our urban centers in this country have, where kinship caregivers are taking care of children and maybe not the direct parents. And I'm always amazed at that. The energy required to kind of take care of my 3-year-old right now, and he's got two parents at home. The energy required now at my age is amazing. I think of grandparents doing it. I have or aunts and uncles, distant family members or family friends, and I have so much admiration for it. And then you add on the possible challenge or of affording groceries, mm-hmm. of taking care of yourself, and the choices that you make for others. I'm just amazed by it. Mm-hmm. And so I know, Jennifer, you wanted to jump in and go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say how we need to change the perception of accessing the SNAP benefits, how it's not an admission of failure, that really taking advantage of this program helps the entire community. It brings money into our region. It helps to support local farmers and local grocery stores. And it helps to improve your own personal health so that you are healthy longer and don't need to use medical services as much. You know, getting people connected to healthy food and having them access what they need helps everybody.
I had a comment from a listener as well, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, who wanted to say that the comment from your first guest was so important. He said, we should not view stopping by and checking on our older relatives as a chore. And Andy Rao was making the comment that you opened by essentially saying that sometimes we may see our older relatives briefly, just for a moment. We're not as always in touch with them as we could be. I wonder if you could respond to what our listener was saying there.
Well, in a lot of cases, that is the truth. I've seen it in my own neighborhood. Come to think of it, of all of us in this room, I'm probably the oldest one of you here. And I don't have any children of my own, but I do have nephews and nieces, mm-hmm. grandnephews and nieces, and great-grandnephews and nieces. Now, a lot of times in the good old days of my youth, during the prehistoric years when dinosaurs roamed the earth, you went to your grandma and grandpa because they were fun to be with. They told you all kinds of interesting stories, and they treated you in a very special way that your parents, who were working to keep you alive, couldn't be bothered to do at that time. That's changed a lot more nowadays. We have a very mobile society. In my day, all of my relatives, all of my uncles and aunts who came off the boat, we all lived within a few feet of each other in the old neighborhood. Now you're forever apart from them. And your parents say, that's fine. You have to move to California. That's fine. Give me a call every so often. You're left alone. We have a lot of older people in my neighborhood, and I see a lot of them at the library, at the Maplewood Y. They're going there, first of all, because A, they have nothing to do, and B, they have a lot of great programs at those places, but their children just don't stop by that much anymore. Part of it is they no longer live here. Part of it is they've got other things to do. And our parents, being good parents and now grandparents, don't want to make a fuss, don't want to look demanding. You know, they're busy, I understand. And that's part of the problem, too, because you don't really know what's going on.
You know, Andy, I think of my own mom back in the Cleveland area, three sons, all in different states now. And what you said rings so true in that our society now, it is much more common for kids to grow up and move. When we're not talking town to town, we may be talking state to state, time zone to time zone. And for anyone listening to this program, and me included listening to Andy there, it's a reminder that that can have an impact. And often our parents, like you say, they don't want to tell you that it's tough. They don't want to tell you how hard it can be because they don't want to make you question your choices or feel bad about it. And I just find that very, very telling. So,
and I think that's what's so what's so wonderful about the senior centers that the county has made very accessible. And for example, we went to the curbside market goes to a senior center. I think it's called The Center, right? Is that what they call it? The one in Brockport?
Yes, I believe the cafe.
Right, and it's actually, I guess it's in Sweden or it's right where the intersection right there. But we go there, and it's a wonderful place for seniors to just be able to congregate and make sure that they're having a good time. And what I will say that's most exciting about sites like that for a program like the curbside market is that our biggest barrier is trying to deal with some of the younger folks who don't necessarily know how to use something like broccoli. When we bring something like broccoli out to one of these senior sites, when we're dealing with the senior population, these are all people who grew up eating fresh vegetables, who want the opportunity to have it. Maybe they have accessibility issues or affordability issues, but Foodlink can take care of that. And we try to take care of all the other stuff through nutrition education classes. Mm-hmm. But with the seniors, you don't need nutrition education. They all know precisely what to do with these things. They know how to use them, how to maximize their nutrition. And going to one of these senior centers is just, it's a real wonderful opportunity for curbside.
All right, we're going to get a short break. We're going to come back and talk to our panel about what's going on as we help food insecure seniors. We had a couple of questions online about, can you define food insecurity? It's a good reminder to the host when I use terminology like that. We should do that. We'll do that when we come back with our panel. Julie Aldrich from the Monroe County Office for the Aging, Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center, Andy Rao from the Rochester Mayor's Office, and Mitch Gruber from Foodlink, all here talking about these initiatives helping our community. That's next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Adam Frank, University of Rochester astrophysicist and the co-founder of NPR's 13.7 Cosmos and Culture blog, joins me in studio. He's talking about the big mysteries of the universe and why it can be so difficult to accept knowing that we'll never know. We're talking about ignorance and how science tries to solve mysteries. Next hour on Connections.
In Alaska, firefighters are battling hundreds of wildfires across hundreds of miles of land with limited resources and little access. Sometimes you're lucky to get a road.
This is like the Ritz-Carlton to me when you have a road system and you can get that as opposed to what normally you would get.
The logistical challenges of fighting fire in Alaska. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections on this Tuesday afternoon. And food insecurity is a term we've been using. If you missed it off the top of the program, the newest survey that we saw out of 2013 has 5.4 million seniors. And I don't like the definition of seniors being 60 and older. I don't think 60. but I'm just using a statistic. We all can agree that 60 is the new 50 and 50 is the new 40 and so on. Right, Andy?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm always being told that 50 is the new 30, so that
there
means that 60 is supposed to be the new 40.
There you go, that's fine.
But when you're 60 and you feel 90, then you know there's something wrong with
okay, it. Well, we all agree on that, but these are the stats and the way they used to define it, and we're talking millions of seniors, technically. 5.4 million seniors as of 2013 who are in a category we call food insecure, and that number could go up by 50%, so we're talking about 15% of our seniors by the year 2025 could be in that category of food insecurity. And Mitch Gruber from Foodlink, we talk about food insecurity. What's the shorthand way you describe what food insecure means?
Yeah, the shortest and most direct definition is food insecure is when you don't know where your next meal is coming from. So, you know, everyone who knows precisely, and that doesn't mean you don't know, you know, whether you're going to eat X or Y for dinner, but it's a matter of knowing that you have that you have the means and the access to the right nutritious foods at least, you know, 3 square times per day. And folks who don't have that, we call food insecure, and those numbers really spiked in 2008 at the recession. FoodLink is the food bank here, so we're the ones that really see food insecurity on the ground on an everyday basis. And we're now distributing about 19 million pounds of food a year within our 10 county service area. That's a huge amount that is growing. That's not a, we're not happy that it's growing. It's not something that we're proud to be able to meet the need. We're not proud that that number is growing. So food insecurity incorporates a whole lot of things, but that's the clearest definition I can give you.
Tell me a little bit more about what you saw starting in 2008.
Just, you know, this was a conversation that we had earlier on this panel, but talking about people having to make a decision between eating and doing X. You know, the reader had wrote an email saying they had chose between eating themselves or making sure their grandchildren were fed. And, you know, the definition of hunger or food insecurity isn't necessarily, it's not the traditional way that we think of hunger in terms of malnutrition necessarily. It's oftentimes about making choices between, are you going to eat or are you going to pay your utility bill? Are you going to eat or are you going to be able to pay for your medication, which is certainly a huge issue in the senior population. So we saw that we do a hunger study every 4 years, and the numbers have continued to increase as to who is food insecure, who has to make those hard decisions. And all of this is kind of the underlying theme through all this is that retail food prices are going up. I mean, we even look right now, and with something that is as uncontrollable as bird flu, we see egg prices skyrocketing. And that's something that's happening on a national level. And, you know, the curbside market, we buy medium eggs from Crayer Farms, a local farm, and we're able to sell those eggs for $2 a dozen, which is the best you'll find anywhere. But this time last year, we could have done those same dozen for $1, $1.25. And those are huge changes that are uncontrollable by a lot of folks here, but that people who are on fixed income don't necessarily see their incomes increase while food prices around them skyrocket.
Yeah, this is, I think, an important point to hit here. There is, I don't want to say a stigma, but there is sometimes this label that healthier food or more local food is definitionally more expensive and to some inaccessible. What do you say to that, Mitch?
You could have me on the show for 10 hours to talk about that exact topic. What I'd say is that, unfortunately, the bottom line is that we do see that there tends to be a price discrepancy between things that are organic and locally grown. And there's a reason for that, and that is that we need to make sure that our small family farmers here in upstate New York are making sure we got to make sure they're getting a fair price for their products. Mm-hmm. What the curbside market tries to do is minimize that by making sure that you know, we keep FoodLink keeps our margins minimal. We take a wholesale price and we pass that right on to individuals. The fact is, unfortunately, I love farmers markets. I go to them. I called in when you had a farmers market panel recently. I love farmers markets, but the fact is that most farmers who are going to farmers markets have to account for their time, their transportation to that market, and the fact that they're going a lot of the product they bring and sit outside in the sun for 4 hours by the time that market's over aren't sellable anymore. They have to incorporate all that into the prices that you see at the farmers markets. So oftentimes we do see really high prices at places like that. And that stigma is there for a reason, unfortunately, but that's precisely where the programs that I run at FoodLink are intending to bridge that gap, make sure that we can get local and fresh food at its most affordable.
I have talked to a number of local small farmers who technically live in poverty. They're technically, in terms, if you look at their income and their week to week, month to month, year to year, they're technically living at a poverty level, getting by as best they can.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, so even with whatever prices that we may stigmatize as sort of too high or whatever we want to And I certainly would never say that myself.
Yeah,
but I've heard it, and they're not making a lot of money.
No, you're not finding. It's not that anyone's trying to price gouge. It's that inputs are really high, and the fact is that folks who can grow and then sell in huge volumes are able to keep prices really low. And unfortunately, we live in a time and place where that's really difficult to compete with. It's very hard to compete with some of the really big boxes. So no one's trying to price gouge. But the fact is that it's very difficult for folks, especially folks on a fixed income, to be able to go out to the store and afford a $7 watermelon, which I've seen. I've seen watermelons at $7. And there's a lot of margin built into that. And we try to make sure that is as minimal as possible.
I want to hit a couple questions or comments that have come in via the web as we continue our discussion on helping our senior population, especially the food insecure senior population. Alicia says, love the idea of a curbside market. How do I volunteer?
You would go ahead and contact us, foodlinkny.org. I think the correct email address would be volunteers@foodlinkny.org. We'd certainly find some great opportunities for you to volunteer.
And Tim writes to the program and says, stop the euphemism. He says, food insecurity, one more government euphemism. Not sure why these very helpful and much needed organizations want to obscure the issue with the phrase that diverts attention from the real problem. The fact is far too many old people can't afford food. They are hungry. I would bet that if you walked up to strangers and asked for a dollar for people with food insecurity, you would get little. If you asked for a dollar for seniors who were too poor to buy food, then you would get a positive response. Extremely high number of seniors and poor children are hungry. They can't afford food. That is unacceptable. It's sad. It's reality. The need is high and much more must be done. Let's stop the euphemisms. From Tim. Mm.
Yeah, I would just say to Tim, you know, when you mentioned the word food desert, That's my response about certain things. I think food desert is a completely ineffective and obscuring term. Food insecurity is a little bit different. This isn't hunger. Like, you know, we're not looking at, when I said before, we're not talking about hunger like malnutrition. That's really not what I meant to say. But if you think about the infomercials with Sally Struthers in Ethiopia, and you look at that's not the type of hunger that we're seeing. Hunger has a lot of different shapes and forms. And in fact, in this country, what you often see is people who are hungry are actually suffering from diet-related illnesses like diabetes, mm-hmm. hypertension. Those are really a lot of the issues. So it's not hunger in this very traditional sense.
Let me hit those numbers again. We read them off the top of the show, but food insecure does have a very serious consequence when we look at 53% more likely to report a heart attack, 52% more likely to develop asthma, 40% more likely to experience congestive heart failure. Those are all related. Mm-hmm. In some way. And some might say, well, correlation, causation, do we know? Mm-hmm. Jennifer McDermott from Catholic Family Center, do you have any doubt that there are related health problems to food insecurity, that there is a causation?
Of course not. Yeah. Of course not. Nutrition is a fundamental player or factor in anyone's health and longevity of life, enjoyment of life. So when I hear the word food insecure, I picture it as, you know, people who are worried about where they're going to get their food or the quality. They've compromised the quality of the food that they buy or the food that they prepare or eat because of limitations, usually in money, you know, limitations because of the cost. But it could be other factors too. But when it's they've compromised what they're eating, they're not eating what they want or need. Because of cost.
In a moment, I'm going to ask Andy Rao to kind of go back over what the city of Rochester is officially launching a new initiative next week. One more quick listener question. Kelly wants to know, how do we get to a place where healthy local food is as cheap as the industrial blank from McDonald's? I should have said fast food. I don't want to. should have broadened it out. But Kelly's point is, how do we get to a place where healthy local food can compete? And I don't know. This may be a question of scale. I'm just thinking out loud here. But think of anything that is produced at a high, high volume, and then think of anything that is produced on a more artisanal or smaller volume, and you're never Mm-hmm. Well, at least I don't say never. I can't think of anything where there's parity in terms of cost. It just doesn't really work in terms of a – unless it's subsidized. And in many ways, that's what we're talking about here.
But, well, and it's all the stuff that McDonald's is using is subsidized.
Yeah, they're subsidized too. That is a good point.
Well, I mean, everything that's the answer to the reader's question is that if we start getting some real activism in terms of the Farm Bill and changing what products get subsidized from the federal government and what doesn't, there'd be huge, huge changes. Currently, corn, soy, wheat, those are the things getting subsidized, and that's all the stuff that's going into your Doritos, your McDonald's burger patties, your French fries, and yet there you have someone who's trying to grow things like carrots, someone who's trying to grow green beans. They're not getting any subsidy whatsoever. So in fact, these farmers that you're talking about, Evan, who are technically under the poverty line, are making all of their money on trying to sell those green beans. They're not getting a lick of government money to help them sustain their farm. That is the biggest problem right there. And to me, this is the problem that I think about more than anything else. In my spare time, when I'm not at Foodlink, I'm finishing a doctorate in history that revolves around this exact issue. And what I would say is that it's crazy because we actually have a real clear solution to the problem, but it requires a lot of changes from the federal government and a lot of the big lobbies like the corn and the sugar, so on, lobbies to lose their power and influence.
Well, Mitch, we're about to start seeing presidential debates in the first caucus state. It's Iowa.
Yeah.
Every time.
And why is that?
It is a small, but I would say not immeasurable part of that question of ag policy and subsidy.
Yeah, but there's a reason why everyone goes, sorry, I know this is terribly off topic, but there's a reason why everyone goes and shills in Iowa.
And shills
to big ag. Meanwhile, in upstate New York, where we actually live in a true breadbasket and have wonderful, amazing small family farmers, that's not being talked about on the ag policy whatsoever.
No, I agree. And so to Kelly's question, which is a good one, how do we get to a point where there's where we don't have a stigma of local healthy food is automatically more expensive? Yes, there is a volume production question, but I recall conversations about energy. You know, there are some listeners who've called this program saying, well, if solar, if cellulosic ethanol, if other kinds of energy were viable, the market would support it. It wouldn't need such heavy government subsidy. And I had a guest one time say, oh, that's funny. You don't think oil and gas is subsidized? And that was an aha moment. Of course it is, just the way big ag is, as Mitch is saying. So it's a question of priority, I think, in many ways. It's an understanding the way subsidy and policy works, and it's a question of priority, and we're a long way from getting there. And maybe sometime, Mitch, when you finish the doctorate, we'll come back and talk at length about
but I will
how
tell
we
you
get that, there.
There's, and there's a, in this region in particular, there's a lot of ways to be able to get really good quality local produce at very affordable prices.
Yes, I would never say it's not more expensive. And I would say if you eat only fast food, what's more expensive are your health bills long-term anyway. Mm. So there are all kinds of other questions associated with it.
Precisely. But, you know, all the way ranging from some of the CSA options in town here okay. to the public market to our curbside market, there's a lot yeah. of different ways to access healthy food really easily. What I would vouch about the curbside market is that we're making it the most easy for people who have mobility and transportation issues. So that's precisely why we're working with all the folks around the table on this very initiative.
All right, let me sort of reintroduce our panel as we talk about what the City of Rochester and their various partners around our area are doing to help seniors that are kind of classified as food insecure. That's simply not knowing where your next meal is coming from. It's not hunger or starvation like you might have seen in ads, but it is a very real and serious problem. And our panel is talking about that. Andy Rao is here from Mayor Lovely Warren's office for the City of Rochester, Mitch Gruber from Foodlink, Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center, and Julie Aldrich from the Monroe County Office for the Aging, and Andy Rao from the Mayor's office. Again, for our listeners who missed it, starting next week, new initiative, and what's going on?
Okay, next week, next Thursday, we're going to be announcing a new initiative whereby we're going to be providing, the city will, with our partners, Foodlink, the county, Law New York, a pamphlet, a folder filled with applications for SNAP, guidelines for SNAP, both in English and Spanish, and the list of the corner markets provided by Foodlink. And we're going to be hitting all these senior centers, all the neighborhood groups, all the social groups that deal primarily with seniors, others as well. And part of the issue here, too, is to make, you know, to make people aware that they qualify for the SNAP benefits and be where they can go to get healthier food, because that's a part of the issue with, you know, senior hunger or food insecurity. As Mitch himself pointed, he hated that phrase food desert, because we really don't. We have all these mom and pop stores up and down Lyle Avenue, up and down Dewey, up and down Clifford, up and down Clinton. There's food all right, but there's no fresh food. It's frozen. It's canned. It's all sugary. The idea going beyond this will ultimately hope that a lot of our mom and pop stores that now exist will seek ways to introduce healthier foods there. Because that way, they're going to get grandma and grandpa every time. They'll be going there shopping for their tomatoes and their lettuce and their broccoli. And while they're there, they're going to be buying their kids the lollipops. So it's a win-win situation for all of those stores. But the first thing is to make those seniors aware. This is out there for you. We, the mayor's office really encourages people to apply for it. They qualify. They should get it. They should live happier and healthier. They're going to produce a happier and healthier family. They'll live long enough to tell their grandchildren all those wonderful stories that my grandparents used to tell me.
And as Mitch Gruber from FoodLink told us earlier this hour, we saw a spike in the number of people who needed help, especially after the financial crisis of 2008 and the recession that followed. And so at some point in your life, if you or a family member need SNAP benefits, the question is, how do you get them? You've never had to go through the process before. And I just want Julie Aldrich from the Monroe County Office for the Aging to make sure we're aware. It's not always a comfortable or a fun place to be, but those resources are available. What would you tell people to do?
For caregivers and seniors who have computer access, you can go online to mybenefits.ny.gov. For those who don't have computer access, you can go to your local Department of Social Services, any of your senior centers. You can come to our office in Monroe Community Hospital at 435 East Henrietta Road on the third floor. You can call New York Connects 325-2800. We're here to help. We're funded through the Older Americans Act, which just celebrated 50 years and just passed the Senate for reauthorization. And our nutrition programs, our nutrition education, our meals that meet a third of the DRI, we're here to help people get the meals they need, to get the food they need, and to work with our partners in the community to ensure that our folks can live happy, healthy, and have the food that they need to support themselves.
Let me grab a phone call. This is Michael in Rochester. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you, Evan. I've been a part of the Westside Farmers Market for a number of years, and went to visit grocery stores to check prices. And in some cases, the grocery stores are using loss leaders, and I found, you know, collard greens were twice as expensive at Walmart's grocery store nearby than they were at our own farmers market. And so, what we have at our market is often not organic. That does add price considerations. But the farmers, if they were to sell to a grocery store, these small farmers might get 5 or 10% of what the consumer is paying. And so, you know, they can make far more money at the farmer's market, although it is a lot of work. So I disagree. Things are not universally more expensive at the local farmer's market. You can go at the end of the market, see if you can cut a deal with the farmer so he doesn't have to take it home. But go in search of more farmers markets and check the prices, because I was surprised. It was hard to find things that were more expensive in the grocery store than at our Westside Farmers Market on Tuesdays at St. Monica's Church.
Very good. Thank you, Michael. Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't want it to seem whatsoever like I'm putting down farmers markets, and I think the Westside Market in particular offers a lot of really good and wonderful deals. We have a lot of really good markets around here. The conversation went that way because we're talking a lot about the accessibility issues, and certainly for the even when you had the Westside Farmers Market on here, you know, one of the conversations I recall you asking the panel was about accessibility to the market, and the fact is that Those markets are very much, especially in the city, very much neighborhood-based, and there's an immense amount of neighborhoods in the city that don't have farmers markets. So I would encourage anyone who lives by the West Side Market or the South Wedge Market or the Public Market, go to those markets first and foremost. See what you can find. Like Michael said, I'm positive that if you look around hard enough, you will in fact find deals that are better than grocery stores, and certainly that's a primary place to go. The sad truth is that in this city, there's so many neighborhoods that don't have farmers markets, and then you, even within the neighborhoods that do, you have a lot of seniors who have some serious transportation and mobility issues to get out to those particular markets.
I think great points from Michael. I appreciate the phone call. Before we lose the hour here, I want to mention something that hasn't come up this hour yet, and Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center. The Hunger Alliance is something that people should be aware of as well. That's been around for how long?
Oh, several years. Several years we've been working on this issue of hunger and aging. It's a kind of a coalition of several different stakeholders and organizations, and it's convened by our local AARP office, and we've held a couple of different community-wide conferences on this issue, and I'm just thrilled that our community and that we are moving forward on this initiative that Andy was talking about to try to get more people connected to SNAP benefits, because as a whole community, it's going to help everybody. This is a great benefit. If we can get more people who are eligible for this to get them signed up and then accessing the vegetables at the public market by leveraging those dollars, I mean, it's a win-win. As a taxpayer, I'm thrilled, because the healthier people are, the less Medicaid benefits they're going to utilize.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just important.
Will writes to the program online. He says, hello, Evan and guests. We also need to get the Social Security and the Federal Reserve on board. We are constantly told that inflation is low. Social Security COLA increases have been low or zero for the last 8 years, yet more seniors live in poverty because of increases in food, rent, health care, etc. No wonder social service agencies are seeing more seniors and others in financial distress. That's from Will. Well, what do we think?
That's true.
I'm completely in. Yeah, he hit the nail on the head. It's an ongoing issue. We, as I mentioned earlier, the reauthorization of Older Americans Act, they haven't added any funding to it. Our older adult population is booming and growing, and the funding for it has remained stagnant. So that means more people with less funds, and they need to come up to play with each other.
We know that the vast majority of the healthcare costs in our lives come in the last 10% of our lives. And what we're trying to do is create a world in which we are healthier for a lot longer. And healthier, living in sort of a good quality of life. I think good nutrition comes from that. That's exactly what part of this effort is. But Julie, your point about no increase in funding. You know, we're in a surge of senior population because medical care is better. So we're living longer. We're seeing life expectancy increase. Do you feel like that there has not been a corresponding prioritization when it comes to funding for this? I mean, is that a concern?
At the federal level, definitely. I know that our county has been very supportive and actually gave me additional funding last year to help meet some of the needs of the transportation issues. And they're continually working and partnering with us to try to maximize what funding we can get, and just continually to try to, you know, do more with less. But it's an ongoing issue that we've been, all the advocates in the older adult community have been pushing, is to reauthorize Older Americans Act, but also add the funding that's needed to support the older Americans.
As we start to wind down the hour, Mitch Gruber from FoodLink, some final thoughts from you. What do you want to leave our audience with this hour?
I just want to make it clear that there's plenty of organizations who are working on a lot of the issues that we face as a greater community right now. And one of the really nice things about the programs that I oversee at FoodLink is just how flexible they are. And if, in fact, there are needs from the community that suggest we need to kind of bend one way or move the other, we will have that conversation. We just recently opened up to what we call our community stores, where we tried to change existing corner stores and turn them into healthier spaces. That was really because we heard from the community that we need to improve on on the corner stores. Our curbside market can has some flexibility in the schedule if there are people who have sites out there that they want us to attend and see how it works. Specifically, based on this conversation, if it's a senior site, be more than happy to explore that possibility. Our programs have been extremely successful because of really good collaboration. Actually every single organization represented in this room is a great partner of ours. And anyone else out there who wants to start a conversation about how to work together, we're open to do it because these problems need to be solved.
Andy Rao from Mayor Lovely Warren's office, about 15 seconds, just some final thoughts.
Okay, final thoughts. SNAP benefits are out there for you. There's no shame in applying for them. There's no shame in receiving them. It's for you to live a happy, healthy, and productive golden years of your life. By all means, go out and apply, use them, and live and eat healthier.
Well, it's great to have you, and I know Mayor Warren is passionate about this issue. It's nice to have you here representing the office. Thanks for taking the time. Nice to have you, Andy.
My pleasure.
Mitch Gruber from FoodLink, nice talking to you, and we'll have much more to talk about going forward. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Jennifer McDermott from the Catholic Family Center. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
And from the Monroe County Office for the Aging, Julie Aldrich. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you very much.
Short break, more connections next.